Wake up call!
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
A Gal Media property. Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And a good Thursday to you as we continue along here on Wake Up Call. Tony D, Ron Culver. You want to hit us up on Twitter? Love to hear from you. At Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, Ron with two N's. We are going back to 1974 Throwback Thursday. Ray Kroc, McDonald's fame, but also as the owner of the Padres, and just ripped into his team on the PA on opening day on this date in 1974, April 9th. According to a latest poll that was done amongst athletic directors at FBS schools, 88%, okay, that's 88% of everybody who plays in the football bowl series, 88% want an expansion of the college football playoff. Surprise, surprise, surprise. 72% of those people that wanted an expansion of the college football playoff are in favor of expanding it to 8 teams. Not 6 with 2 bye weeks, but 8 teams. But here was an interesting part of the poll. Of those athletic directors that were polled that want to see an expansion of the playoffs, so this is 88% of the athletic directors, 66% of those want to see a non-Power 5 team get an automatic bid into the expanded playoff. Now, that's interesting because it's not the top 8 teams. Like if the 72% got their way and we had a college football playoff that was 8 teams, it wouldn't be just the top 8. Let's get to the polls. Let's get to the committee. Let's just add 4 more teams onto the list that they give us every single time that they get together and give us, you know, towards the end of the season. Just give us the top 8. No, they want 7 top teams and 1 of from the non-Power 5 team, regardless of where they are in the top 25. So even if your best non-Power 5 team was ranked 18th in the country, they would get in over a team that was legitimately 8th in the standings. Interesting poll. That's a lot of people siding with one side of the argument. Expansion of the playoff, I think, is coming, and their contract ends at the end of the 2025 season. I think it's coming. I think they're seeing it work. I think they like the way it works, and I think it's going to come. I don't know what and what it would look like. I don't know if it would be 8 or 6 or whatnot. But that automatic bid to a non-Power 5 team, I'll believe that when I see it.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
One of the smaller, colorful moments in baseball history, Ray Kroc, owner of the Padres, also McDonald's fame, saying, "I've never seen such a stupid ball playing in my life." On opening day for the Padres in there in a 9-5, they were losing 9-5 at the time when he grabbed the public address microphone in front of 39,000 fans. On this date, 1974, good music. God, this has already been rolling along this morning. I feel more awake now than I was. I feel ready to roll. So back to this poll, this college football poll. I agree that, listen, if I'm an AD, here's the deal. I want to get in the playoff, right? I'm surprised that there were 12% of the people who said no to this. What are they, the AD at Clemson, Alabama, and Ohio State? I mean, 12% of the ADs did not want an expansion of the playoff.
How many teams?
Oh, for FBS?
Yeah.
I'll have to look it up.
Because we can figure out how many schools and then probably figure out which school said
who's,
it.
Who's standing on the hill that says, oh, no, this is good enough?
Yeah, I would say Saban, Dabo.
Yeah, right. So
Ryan Day.
So those guys vote. 88% said I want an expansion. Okay, now what would expansion look like, right? 6, 8. Don't give me 16 or 32. I hate those. And there's always one guy that goes, I got a 32-team tournament that would use all the bowl games. Like, nah, God. No, we're not doing basketball here. But 8 doesn't seem so bad. 6 with 2 bye weeks doesn't seem too bad. But I was surprised that, all right, you got 72% of those in favor expansion saying that they want 8. And then you get this automatic bid thing to the non-Power 5 conference. Now, look, I'm all for a Power 5 conference getting into the playoff. I'm a big supporter of that. I wanted to see UCF get their due when they went undefeated, and then but had come off a win against Auburn the year before. I wanted them to get a little bit of love and attention. But an automatic bid doesn't feel right, because you never know what shape your best non-Power 5 conference team is going to be. Most of the time, they got one loss, right? Most of the time. One of those teams is coming with one loss. But what if you get a year where that's not the case? What if you get a year in all of the non-Power 5 conferences, the winner has got two losses, and they're not in the top eight? So you're not bringing us the best eight teams. Remember, the thing about college football has always been, I think it's something that's got to be knocked down a little bit, because there's this complete desire of the sport to make sure that its champion is the very best football team that has played this season. Whereas other sports don't do that. The other sports say our regular season is to set up the postseason. And when you get to the postseason, all bets are off. We don't care. You want to be a 500 baseball team and win your division that's a little weak and run your way through a World Series championship? Absolutely. You want to be a 9 seed in the NCAA tournament and get hot at the right time and run your way through to a championship? More power to you. Same thing in the NFL. You want to be a 6 seed and have to play all your games on the road and win the Super Bowl like the Giants did, like the Packers did? Again, more power to you. For whatever it is, football's very reluctant to say, well, the regular season is to get you in the postseason, and in the postseason, anything can happen. They want to make sure the team that's hoisting the trophy is considered one of the best, and one of the best the entire year. So the automatic bid doesn't fit the concept of what baseball, college football has been trying to do. Right? Why they were reluctant to have a playoff in the first place. They would say that all the time. Right, the argument against going to a playoff had always been, we want this regular season to mean more than any other sport. And we just, you know, look, the NFL is expanding its postseason, which means more mediocre teams getting involved in the playoff run. We seem to be okay with that. We're cool with that. Right, we are. Right, I told you that I didn't like the Major League Baseball going to this one game wild card. I was wrong. It's exciting. It's fun. If it means a team that has struggled at times, didn't look great at times, but got in, you know, got hot at the right time and found their way into the wild card, great. That's what happened to Washington, right? Washington found their way into the wild card game against Milwaukee, won it, and won the World Series. Good. Tournament teams that have made runs to the Final Four from being, you know, a seeded 10th or 9th or 7th, or had to play, you know, VCU one year, had to play in the play-in game in Dayton and made their way to the Final Four. So we've had these sort of stories where you take advantage of the postseason opportunity to make amends for a struggle in the regular season. College football doesn't want any of that nonsense. College football doesn't want that. They don't want you to get a quote-unquote second chance. They want you to have every game matter so much it hurts. So that if you lose, you're scrambling. You're looking at the landscape. I need other teams to lose. Where does this put us? Is this a good loss? If the committee is going to allow us to lose one game, is this the one game? How did we look? Did we lose on the road? Did we lose by a last-second field goal? Did we get throttled by 45? Is one of our star players missing but is coming back? They want that conversation. You put an automatic bid to this, it throws that whole idea out. But on the flip side, I understand where these ADs are coming from. There's a lot of them that are working for non-Power 5 schools. They say, look, we never get in. We've given the country some really good football teams. Football teams that we felt could be on that level of competition. And even if they were to get blown out by an Alabama or a Clemson, at least put them in the show. Because they deserve to be in the show. And we don't get in. We can't knock on the door. We can't break it down. So I understand where they're coming from, because the only way you can showcase if you can play with those big boys is to sometimes just get forced into doing it, where there's no other choice. We hate the idea of letting Central Florida in, but we have to. Boise State or whatever it is. Name your team. Name your good non-Power 5 football team over the last couple of years. Right? I used to have this argument with people all the time about Boise State. Boise State used to drive me crazy, because I would be in their corner, backing them up, saying, look at their history. Look at what they've been doing, right? They went to Atlanta, beat Georgia in Atlanta. They beat Oklahoma in the Fiesta Bowl. They had all these wins, right? They'd show up. They'd play anybody they could in the schedule, and yet they would be undefeated. We'd be talking about them as a possible BCS back in that old system. Should they be in the BCS? Should they be in the one? Should they be ranked one or two in the country? Should they be in the conversation? No, they don't play in the SEC. No, they don't play in the Big 12. No, right? Right, they would be right there on the cusp at the end of the season, and I don't know, somebody from Nevada would kick a field goal and they'd lose. Or it would just always occur, and I'd go, oh, I can't do it. I can't stick up for this team that would look so good and so impressive and start building momentum and national attention, and then they would, on a crazy Saturday night, they would lose on the road to like Fresno State or something, whatever it was. It would drive me nuts, right? And what would happen inevitably is, All of the people that doubted them would say, see, I'm vindicated. I told you they don't belong in this conversation. That and now they don't get a chance. They get one loss and they can't be in the conversation, but an SEC school can have a one loss and be in the conversation because the schedule is tough. It's not a fascinating poll by any means. It really does go kind of the way you think, right? You have athletic directors that want to get into the postseason. It means more exposure. It means more money. All of those things. It means more money for their conference. So you're going to want to see that. And here's the other part is, especially if you're a conference that has been left out of the conversation a few times where you felt like you had a good team. You know, when Baylor and TCU, for example, were going neck and neck in the conference in the first playoff and they didn't get in. There were a couple of years the Pac-12 couldn't get a team in. You know, when you are one of these Power 5 schools and you realize, well, one of us ain't getting in, there's a natural inclination to go with expansion. If you're a non-Power 5 team, you absolutely vote for expansion because you know that's the only way you could get in without an automatic bid, because getting in the top four is impossible given the landscape of college football. So, yeah, it's not surprising, but the one aspect that I do take away from this poll, which is that there were so many people that want an automatic bid, regardless. An automatic bid devalues your postseason because it says there are seven teams that have to be amongst the seven best in the land. But there's one spot where somebody doesn't have to be one of the best in the land. They get to be the best amongst their group. And that group may be easier to overcome than being one of the top seven teams in the country. If you're Florida, you're Dan Mullen, you win 10 games, you might not get in this thing because there's an automatic bid tied to Central Florida or whoever. That's where this is interesting, because like I said, it's almost unifying how college football goes. Yeah, I know you like that basketball thing. I know you like it when we throw 68 teams into a three-week pot and we stir it and we come up with a champion. It's fun. There's brackets. There's Cinderella stories. There's schools you've never heard of, and they're all of a sudden winning, and now you got to look them up to find out where they are. We don't do that here. We don't want to do that here. To us, where we get value is when you're home and it's November and it's early in the month. You got a couple of games left and you're playing a team in your division that's got a couple of wins, but playing better. And it's the fourth quarter and you're down by five and you have the ball. And it's a minute 13 on the clock and you need a touchdown to salvage your season and you're really sweating, because you know you can't overcome it. Because that loss is going to really tear apart your national championship hopes. They want, you may not like that as a fan. Lord knows. I mean, being married to my wife, I've gone through a number of these scenarios with the Gators over the years where she is just like, is that going to keep us out of the national championship hopes? And I've turned to her and said, yes, it will. That's a bad loss. And she's like, oh, it happens. It happens to all of us. College football likes it that way. Expansion, sure. Automatic bid, surprise that 66% went that way. I'd like to know where that breaks down. How many of those 66% are from the non-Power 5 schools? Does anybody from the SEC think that's a good idea? Does anybody from the Big 12 think that's a good idea? I don't know. I kind of doubt it. I know if I was an AD at Auburn, I would not vote for this at all. I would not vote for an automatic bid at all. Right? But 66% did. That's a lot. All right. Again, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, Ron with two N's. Good, the bad, and the dumb. That's coming up in 15 minutes. You don't want to miss that. So continue along on Wake Up Call.
Everybody's doing a brand new dance now.
Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Oh, the locomotion from 1974 on a Throwback Thursday. Goodness. Now, who did this song?
This is Grand Funk Railroad.
Oh, Grand Funk Railroad, sure, sure.
I know, there an 80s version, like late 80s version, that was really popular.
Yeah.
But I can't remember who did
Kylie
that.
Kylie Minogue. I think did that.
Was it?
I think.
All right. I'll go with you on that one. I have no idea.
That's just a gut feeling. That's one of those feelings like you think you know the answer, could be proven wrong. I have no idea. Hey, when your battery goes dead, everything could come to a stop, so don't take a chance on getting stranded. O'Reilly Auto Parts will test your battery free of charge. If your battery needs to be replaced, O'Reilly Auto Parts can help you find the exact battery that fits your car or truck at a guaranteed low price. Make sure your vehicle is prepared for the weather ahead by getting your battery tested for free at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. So, as you know, I've been diving into these 30 for 30 sports documentaries. You know, I was watching yesterday. I wanted to get get the feel for golf. I wanted to just, you know, it's Masters week with no Masters. And I watched the John Daly 30 for 30, Grip It and Rip It. I didn't see this when this came out. I can't believe I didn't see this. It was incredible. First of all, John Daly's in it, which is great. It's always great when you do a documentary where the person is full cooperation, where they're like, yeah, listen, my life is a roller coaster mess, and I'll be more than happy to tell you all about it. Like, you don't have to do too much digging. I'll tell you exactly what the story is. Before Tiger Woods, for those of you, like, look, I've been following golf since I was a kid, you know, something like a teenager. Like, I was a big Greg Norman fan in the 80s and in the 90s when he lost the 86 Masters and lost to Bob Tway at the PGA and won a British Open. I've been watching the Masters since the mid-80s. I've been watching golf and following golf. I've seen Phil Mickelson come. I saw the energy and the golf people had for Phil Mickelson when he was at Arizona State, and then his arrival on the Pro Tour in 92. I've seen Tiger obviously get anointed, you know, the king of the sport almost the second he won the Masters in 97. I've seen a lot of phenomenons come. Jordan Spieth, you know, young kid leading the Masters and losing to Bubba Watson and then coming back the next year and winning it and then winning the US Open. But John Daly is the most unique story because there was a period of time where Tiger Woods made golf cool. Tiger Woods made everybody want to go take lessons and learn how to play. And I played golf in high school. It was a geek sport. I mean, it was a geek sport. I don't know how else to put it. But Tiger Woods made playing golf cool. Like, you could be cool playing that sport. But there was a period of time where John Daly did the exact same thing. He was bringing a sport to a public that thought it was very elite. So this was 91. And Daly's story, for those of you who don't know, is he was given an invite to play in the PGA Championship at Crooked Stick in Indiana as an alternate. And Nick Price had to pull out of that tournament. I think his wife was pregnant or something was going on. But anyway, he had to pull out of that tournament. So they called John Daly and said, "You're in. Get here." And he drove all night to Indiana to play in the PGA Championship. He used Nick Price's caddy. And he was out of nobody knew who he was. He played college golf at Arkansas. Nobody knew who he was. He had a mullet. But the one thing that they knew immediately, the people knew immediately, was he hit it a tremendously long way, a long way. But the average drive back in those days, if you were busting it out 280, 285, that was pretty good. I mean, that was really good. John Daly was hitting it 350, 325, 350, 330 every time. So he's hitting it a mile. Again, this is before Woods. This is before guys are constantly knocking it over 300 yards on a consistent basis. He was drilling that golf ball. And it was ballata. The clubs were half the size. I mean, the heads were half the size on the golf club. He was crushing it. But he had amazing touch around the greens, and he could putt, and he had distance control. And he just caught the groove, and he won the PGA Championship. And he's this bumpkin from Arkansas that nobody knows about, and he becomes a legendary hero. Legendary hero, and everybody wants a piece of him. And he's in his 20s, and he's in contention for a couple of tournaments, so you kind of know who he is, and he's building something, and then all of a sudden he wins a major. He went from nobody knew who he was, nobody thought he would make the field, nobody thought he belonged, to winning the PGA Championship and becoming an overnight sensation. So he went from barely any money to having all the money and everybody chasing him. And he got involved in drinking, heavy drinking. He had a lot of demons he was working on that people were pulling for him because they liked him. And people in golf were pulling for him because they liked him. People really like John Daly. Really like, and they still do. They still do. They love what he did for the sport. They love the grip it and rip it stuff. They loved it. He was putting on a show for people. Tiger loved him. Tiger still loves him. And then he's pulling out of tournaments. He's got alcohol problems. He's withdrawing from events. He's got to go get a rehab. And then he's finally clean. And he goes to the 1995 British Open. And the British Open is being played at St. Andrews. And this is the elite of the elite. I mean, you want to talk about snobby golf. I mean, it's St. Andrews. And Daly wins the British Open. So and this is why this was important, because it's one thing to be a folk hero, but folk heroes don't have sustaining power, right? They just, like, after a while it dies and we're on to the new thing. Daly knew winning a major, a lot of people have won majors kind of out of nowhere and then disappeared. The sport is littered with them, right? Guys that are just, they're champions, but they caught lightning in a bottle and that's, you know, they never really recaptured it. But he knew the moment he was in the playoff with Constantino Rocca in St. Andrews and he won that, he knew he was legendary now. You can't, two majors in a career, that puts you on another level. Winning the British Open puts you on an even bigger level. The British Open allows you to come back to that tournament until you're 65. I think they've narrowed that back down a little bit. They throttled that back down a little bit. But back then, you would get an invite until you're 65 years old. That meant Daly was going to be a presence at this tournament for a long time. He knew it. They knew it. And the fans loved him. They loved him. And it was, again, this is all pre-Tiger. This is all pre-Tiger took the sport to another stratosphere. Daly really did take it. It's a fascinating documentary. If you have access to it, watch it. The honesty in Daly's part of the documentary sells it better than anything, because he does talk about the demons. He does talk about the gambling, talks about the domestic abuse. He talks about the police coming. He talks about the alcohol. He talks about his background, his kid growing up, what it was like, the abuse he suffered as a child. Talked about his weight. He's very open about this. But if you want to see a story about a guy that was a golf phenomenon before the biggest phenomenon the sport has probably ever seen, watch the Daly documentary. Very good. Good, the Bad, and the Dumb next.
Wake Up Call continues now.
time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb here on a Throwback Thursday. We don't necessarily have to go back to 1974 to get the good, the bad, and the dumb because it's here.
Yeah, it's here.
What is the good of the day?
You know, a lot of coronavirus related things.
Yes.
I try my hardest to keep away from it, but that's, you know, it's actually consumed the world. So
sure has.
Everything is coronavirus related now from here on out. That's just the way it is. It's the new norm. Tyler Perry is doing his thing like he always does. He paid for all the groceries for the elderly during senior hours.
Nice.
At 73 stores across Atlanta and New Orleans.
Whoa! That's...
No idea how much that is.
That's amazing.
But I don't know. I'm trying to think, like, okay, how many seniors probably in an hour? Say maybe roughly 20, right?
Yeah.
And then if we do an average of $50 per person.
Oh, that's a fortune.
I mean, that's so much money.
Good for him. Good for him. That must have been nice.
Yeah. I guess people were tearful, obviously.
Sure. Because the cool thing about it is you just tell the stores, you're like, look, between this and this, just give me the bill.
Right.
I'll just give me the bill. I'll make sure it's done.
Yeah, 73 stores.
So I'm not putting a limit on it or anything like that. Whatever they bring to the counter, just ring it up, save the receipt, and I'll make sure I send you the money.
Yeah. Wow. That's all you have to do.
Good, Tyler just ring Perry. It up that's and, awesome.
You know, you don't need to tell me how much it is. Just send it to X amount, X place or whatever.
Right. Exactly. That is wonderful. That is really great. I'm glad you're hearing more. I saw a story of this one couple of someone in the couple was famous for something, but they went to a restaurant. They left a $100,000 tip for everybody in the restaurant to share.
He did that too.
Yeah. So that's awesome.
I mean, he didn't leave a $100,000 tip. I think he went and got food. Let me find the right amount so that way I don't want to sell Tyler Perry short since he's doing great things. But he, why can't I find it? He left a $500 tip for each of the 42 employees when he went to this restaurant for takeout.
Yeah, exactly. Weekend. I think that's what that couple did too. They left money for everybody. So the cooks, everybody's getting a piece of this $100,000 that they left to this local restaurant.
It's only $21,000.
Yeah.
No big deal.
Yeah, it's great. It's wild. That is good. These stories are, it is, listen, I've had my own different feelings about all this. I've gone, you know, at my house and I've heard people say like, yeah, you know, this is a sign from God that we all need to slow down. And I'm like, yeah, but there's a lot of people who don't get to slow down. So I'm not really going that into that theology, but I do think that this will have a lot of people thinking differently about taking care of each other. I'm hoping that when this is all done, we start thinking about, you know what? I saw the world a different way, or I saw people in a different way. I saw circumstances in a different way, or it was always there and I knew it, but I never really thought about it. And now I think about it more. And maybe that would be something good that comes out of it. I hear these stories a lot and it reminds me of? It's something you and I chatted about before when this thing kind of first broke. Hollywood always gives us there's the pandemic and then there's the guns and murder. Like right away, right? Like you'll just shoot somebody for a loaf of bread. And then we're not really quite at the, you know, the apocalyptic set, but we are a lot more willing to help each other out than Hollywood has ever portrayed in an apocalyptic movie. You know, we are willing to do things like that. It's pretty great. It was really great. So that's a good.
It is a good. And to kind of branch off of that, kind of leads into the bad. I have a dual bad today.
All right, two bads?
Two bads.
All right.
Because one, I really want him to stop doing this, but Darren Rovell can't help donation shame.
Okay, I think I know where you're going with this, but let's go with this.
Jeff Bezos donated, I think he donated roughly $25 million, right, towards COVID-19. I don't know if it was towards medical. I'm trying to find the details of what he actually donated to. And Darren Rovell was quick to point out that $25 million of his $122 billion piggy bank that that'd be roughly every each American donating $56, or it would cost it'd be like an average person donating $56.
Yeah, you're right. He does that a lot.
It's just this constant donation shame. It's like, hey, you know what? Who cares?
These guys are giving up money.
$25 million. Yeah. It's the single largest donation ever.
I get it, right? It's like the average American giving 75 cents. Oh, I get it. But it's still $25 million. It's not 75 cents. It's still $25 million, and that $25 million is going to be used for good. And I guarantee you, if there's another charity that needs money, he probably will donate to that, too.
What's he expecting? Is he expecting, he's worth $122 billion. He should donate half.
Yeah. To where? To one place, to multiple places?
And that's the other problem, too, is that you can donate a certain amount of money, but you got to be careful where you donate it to, because there's so many wrong people out there.
Yeah, of course. Of course. You ever go to a store and at the end they go, you want to donate a dollar to whatever? I always do, but in the back of my mind, I always go, how do I know?
Yeah, what was that for?
Like, how do I know? Well, how do I know you guys aren't just pocketing that? I mean, I'm not you give me a shamrock or you give me a little thing to write my name on, but I don't know. I'm not 100% sure. Like, I don't mind doing it because it's a buck, but let me tell you something. If you asked me for $100, I'd probably say no, not because I don't want to do it, because that uncertainty.
You don't know where it's going.
I don't want to part with $100 for something that I'm unsure of. A dollar, all right. But if you're asking me to, like, if you called me up and asked me to donate $500 to a charity, I'm looking into it. To see how much of it goes to the people, what percentage of it. I'm sure Bezos' people do the exact same thing, right? Yeah, let's make sure this $25 million is going to where we need it and not towards bureaucracy and salaries for people and bonuses for people within the charity.
It's just research upon research upon research, like making sure that, there isn't some like private sector fund that this money is going to.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I understand that. Yeah, he does that a lot.
And it's just donation shame. It's like, you know what? Let's celebrate the fact that all these guys are stepping up and donating.
Exactly.
Tyler Perry probably did something remarkable, but at the same time, let's think about it. Did he just donate like $5 million? No, I don't know if he did.
Yeah, right.
What if, would you have shamed Tyler Perry where we're celebrating him for buying groceries for 73 stores for the seniors? Would it be different if we said, yeah, but it only totaled like $100,000?
Yeah, exactly.
And would we be mad at Tyler Perry? Like, he only donated $100,000. For shame, Tyler Perry.
No doubt. No doubt.
No reason to donation shame. Just, let's just thank him and move on.
All right, the second bad of the day.
Your favorite coach and mine. Probably somebody who voted for an expansion of playoffs, and probably does not want an automatic bid for a non-Power 5 conference. Mike Gundy.
Yeah, Mike Gundy, one of my favorite coaches.
Yeah, we didn't really get into this story. We might have to expand onto the story a little bit more. He's ready for Oklahoma State to get back to the business of football.
Yes, he is.
Here's a little quick soundbite from him.
We need to get back to playing football for a variety of reasons if the medical people say we can. We don't need to let 1 or 2 months take that away from us. There's too many people that are relying on it.
There you go. He wants to play football.
He wants to get back
now.
And he put a date on it, May 1st.
May 1st. He wants to get back into practicing.
He wants to get all the tests, have each player start everyone being tested. Because they're just readily available? I don't know.
Here's the thing, man. It's do I agree with him in theory? Yeah, but I don't agree with him in practice. Right? Look, the NBA would come back tomorrow if they could. Right? The NHL would come back tomorrow if they could. None of these leagues are like, oh, thank God we got coronavirus going on because I don't really want to do this anyway. Whew. I'm glad we got to take a break. Every year we got to play 82 games in a postseason. It drives me nuts. They're dying to get back on the court, but baseball, same thing. Baseball put together a Arizona plan that's getting ripped apart, but at least they tried to do something.
The NBA, they're so desperate. It's like, well, let's do a game of horse.
Yeah, let's do something.
A lot of these players have home gyms. Let's just do that.
You will go back, Mike Gundy, when everything's cool. You can't. You can put a date on it if you want, but it's better if you just go, hey, we're going to play. Like you said at the beginning, want to play when they tell us to play. But we all agree we want to see football back because there's a semblance of normalcy when football comes back.
Not only that, but I mean, you're stating the obvious. You know, like people want, you know, Oklahoma wants football. It's like, yeah, the whole country does. Yeah,
absolutely.
There isn't an American in this country who doesn't want some sort of sport to be back on right now. Even the ones who don't watch sports want sports because now people are taking up their Wi-Fi.
And you know what? We all agree. We all agree. But, you know, don't be surprised if your athletes aren't gathering in Stillwater on May 1st to play football.
Or don't force them. That's the scary thing, too.
Yeah.
You know, because you have like 18 and 19-year-olds who are extremely impressionable who might be thinking, like, if I don't show up right now, well, I'm going to be off this team.
Can he do that?
I don't know.
Is Oklahoma in one of those lockdown states?
I don't know if Oklahoma is.
Yeah. I hope the NCAA, and I think they do, I think the NCAA has a freeze on all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So they do have a freeze, but I don't know if it pertains to fall sports yet.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they have a freeze, you know, like, I mean, you can't do anything right now. That's why spring football is canceled.
I don't think a coach can approach. Yeah. I'm not 100% sure.
At the same time, we mentioned it the other day. NCAA wasn't invited to Trump's phone call.
That's true. They were not.
So,
that's true.
Even though they make the most money.
The dumb of the day.
The dumb of the day is quarantine making people do crazy things. I found this to be dumb because I find it hard to believe. Yet so easy to believe.
Okay.
For the first time ever, Tony, Nick Saban is now the proud owner of his own email address.
I thought this was an April Fool's joke on April 8th.
This sounds like an Onion article.
Totally.
All day long.
Totally an Onion article.
But at the same time.
He just got email?
He just got an email address. He finally has his own personal email address.
So he's been using email.
But only Alabama Athletic email. Yeah, and his wife has been monitoring his email. Like I don't think he's ever personally signed into his email.
Got it.
So he finally has something like, you know, NickSaban@Alabama.com or maybe it's NickSaban@Yahoo.com. I don't know.
So when he's at the office, he's got email. But when he's at home and they set up like the charter account, they're like, Saban family, what do you want?
I don't know if he has email at the office.
That would blow me away if he didn't have it at the office.
I honestly want to say it's one of those things that he probably comes into his office and the emails have been printed off for him.
That sounds like you know what? I take that back. I can totally see it where he's got a number of assistants. He's got so many people that are like, tell this person this, and they're doing the emails for him. Like they're emailing whatever he needs to get emailed or respond to an email. He just has somebody do it for him. I could see that. I could see a guy of his age and status going, look, I don't want to learn this. And I don't need to, I want, you know.
So this is what he said in an Instagram Live interview with Maria Taylor. He said, one of the positives of COVID-19 pandemic is he has an email now. They were sending them all to Miss Terry, right? She fired me and said, I'm not dealing with your stuff anymore. So I had to do it on my own.
So he had an email. His wife was dealing with it. Now he has to deal with it. Like he has to figure out his password and stuff?
I guess, or maybe... Said Saban said his wife gets 387 emails when the two get away for a weekend. She spends the next day answering all those emails.
Oh, who wants to do that? I don't care if you love your husband at all. Who wants to answer all that email?
I know, but it's a statement that's hard to believe, but at the same time,
really
it's like, I could totally see him never turning on a computer.
Oh, certainly. Absolutely.
And that's part of it. Remember yesterday we were talking to, I forgot who we were talking to yesterday.
Mike Tannier.
You know, that the fun thing will be to see, we'll be watching these coaches and GMs turning on computers.
Yeah, sure.
Because some of them probably never have.
Yeah.
Or don't know how to.
Using that kind of technology.
Yeah, to draft.
Nice. Well, good for Nick Saban.
Welcome to the 20th century.
Yeah, well, welcome to the 21st century. Is that what we're in now?
21st century? Yeah, I don't know what we're in. He's finally arrived.
He basically got email for the when everybody else got it like 25 years ago, 23, 22 years ago. Like he got email. That's great. Good, Nick. Good job, Nick. That's awesome. All right. That is the good, the bad, and the dumb. We're going to Throwback Thursday, SB Nation AM.
Mark.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hi, Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Glad you can be with us here on Wake Up Call. You know, I thought about that Nick Saban. The more I thought about that Nick Saban email thing, that is more believable, the more I really processed that. It seems
totally
unbelievable at first, and then you really think about it, you're like, yeah. But email's been around since, the mid-90s? Like, when he was with Belichick and with the Cleveland Browns? Like he never had email with the Dolphins? He never had email at LSU? He never had email at Alabama?
But would it really surprise you if you heard Belichick didn't have email?
Yeah, that's true.
There's just some of these coaches that are just, I don't know, they just seem like they're not technological and advanced yet.
And if you don't want it, you never have to get it. Nobody at these schools or these businesses would ever tell him he has to have it. He'd be like, well, I can have it, but I don't need to, like, monitor it. I'll have somebody else do that. That's more believable the more I think about it.